11 o'clock hour. Cody Eagle back here in St. Joe. Chiefs training camp continues. No pads today. As we've mentioned, it was a soggy start to practice, but now it looks like it's going to turn out to be a really nice day after everything. And very comfortable out here for Chiefs fans that made the trip if they were able to deal with the rain the
rain,
first
the
40 minutes or so. And now all is well here in St. Joe as we are inside the Comcast business tent powering possibilities. Reminder, we're expected to have Chiefs wide receiver Justin Ross join us after practice. Also going to hear from Andy Reid and Carson Steele and Xavier Worthy. So full show Chiefs coverage coming your way. For the next couple of hours, we're the only show, the only station broadcasting from Chiefs camp. And reminder, on Thursday at 6 a.m., 96.5 The Fan launches. We're fired up for this on Thursday morning at 6 a.m. And we'll have Chiefs and Royals and K-State and Missouri all on one station. For the first time ever, the Chiefs will be on an all-sports station. And on the FM side, for one sports station to have everything like that's never happened in Kansas City. So we can't wait.
No, absolutely can't wait. And the AP Top 25 just came out, and Missouri and K-State are both ranked in the Top 25. Missouri at 11, K-State.
And Kansas, man.
18.
All three are
so that'll be right here on The Fan. 96.5, yep. Well, not right here, but 96.5 The Fan coming up on Thursday.
And all three local schools in the AP Top 25. I know Drew, I'm sure, will have more on this on his podcast this week and everything. But, you know, the poll rankings and all that, once we get past week one, I don't care for them because the College Football Playoff Committee ultimately is what's going to decide this, and those are the rankings. But off air, Drew, you made a fair point that heading into the season, the hype and all that, it sets the tone for narratives, right? And so that's why it's great to see Missouri at 11, K-State 18, and Kansas 22 to open up the season. I really think all three locals should be 4-0 out of the gate.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we know how good K-State is. We know how good Missouri is. For KU, obviously, the Jalen Daniels question is there. But them starting inside the top 25, I think, helps their case and also K-State's case as well. If they don't win the Big 12, if they can go 10-2, 11-1, KU's got a really nice schedule to potentially do that, they might have a case to make it over a 9-3 SEC team or a 10-2 SEC team if KU go 11-1, for instance, or something like that. So KU starting inside the top 25, I think, helps. Just in terms of them being able to get the respect from the rest of the country.
Whether we claim, yeah, a lot of it is, it's like, well, it's a separate poll and all those things. Yeah, but they do factor those things in. It's like you can't help the hidden bias that is, well, that team wasn't even expected to be good. Are they all that good, really? If the coaches poll and the AP poll and all these others do factor in, and it's not just a mathematical equation like the BCS used to be, which, by the way, also seemed to factor in where you were ranked preseason. Otherwise, different teams would have gotten in over the years based on that, too. So it just, it's like a little bit of juice, but more for local, it's great.
Oh,
because
yeah.
All three are top 25 teams.
Yeah, if you're a fan of any of the three, there's real belief, and there should be real belief that your
any
school
of you can make the college football playoff.
Yeah, with the expanded field, like it's not even just that all three are going to be really good, but coupled with the expanded playoff, it's not, if there were only four slots, we'd even, you know, Missouri I think has the best chance to get in the expanded field. If it was,
and we
not,
call K-State and KU a long shot.
Yeah, we would be like, oh man, you got to, I mean,
win longer, the
you would have to go. Missouri would have to finish top two in the SEC if it was the old format. Now they just got to finish top four in the SEC this year to actually most likely get in the college football playoff based off of their schedule. And so it's going to be a fun fall. On the KU note, it's the first time since 2008 they've been in the top 25 preseason in both the coaches and the media polls. So just reminds you of how far they've
come. Was that a pretty good year for Kansas?
Turned out to be a pretty good year for them. So yeah, we'll talk plenty of college football.
The last really good year they had.
We'll be honest. Like we've been talking off air. We'll be, like I'm sure most, we'll be talking more college football this year than we have.
Sure.
Because we're not alienating any one fan base because all three have a shot this year instead of, you know, ticking off a couple of you that don't care about one program
how
or the
one
other.
Program's doing well.
All
the
three
other
are relevant. All three are relevant. Some might end up being more relevant than others come November or December, but we're obviously excited about that. One team that has been relevant far more than a lot of people expected the entire season, that's the Kansas City Royals, who are right there in a pennant chase, who are right there in the wild card spot with the third spot, a half game out of the second. We alluded to the bullpen a little bit. Hunter Harvey, while he has been disappointing to this point based off of what they gave up. Remember,
yes,
they have control on him next year, so let's see.
Caden Wallace felt like a good big give.
But to this point, the performance has been rocky, and then now you're dealing with an injury. He's officially on the IL with a back issue, not the same back issue that he missed one or two outings or two games for. I texted my buddy in D.C. You guys know on BetQL I do a show with Grant Paulson. I texted him because he covers the Nationals. He got to know Hunter Harvey a little bit. I said, hey, was back problems ever a thing in his time? And he said, no, this is a new thing. So maybe it makes you feel better, like not right in the moment. But
it hasn't been like a problem he's dealt with his entire career.
Correct. This is new. This is a new issue, unfortunately. And maybe this goes back to at the time he was traded, everybody acknowledged that the Nationals overworked Hunter Harvey this year. Early on, he was super effective, and they overused him. And maybe that is throwing off the entire season now for Hunter Harvey. And if that's the case, that's a real bummer because, yeah, they have control on him next year. But if he's not able to contribute the way they hoped for this year after trading what they did, that's a big misstep, unfortunately, for how this has played out.
Well, because if he worked out, then I feel like our conversations around the bullpen are entirely different. If he was just like a better than the other relievers, not a superstar closer gold, but just better than the other relievers on a consistency standpoint, well, then you're having a very different conversation. Well, then you got two guys who are consistent, and then you can mix and match, you know, like you're asking one other guy to be more consistent or two other guys to be a little more consistent. You're not asking for the world. Versus now, you are stuck in the same position that you've been in since you traded for Urseg, which is you trust Urseg, and you don't know when to use him because the problem is if you don't use him in the seventh to get yourself out of the jam, do you even need him in the ninth by the time he gets back to him? Because what I'm trying to figure out is what's weird about it, though, is they have this year been willing to be like, you're the ninth inning guy. Ninth every time, MacArthur. Ninth every time. Like, they have used a couple of guys where they have said, you're essentially the closer. You are pitching in the last inning of the game, is how they have used people rather than leverage. I know new modern baseball would suggest the inning doesn't matter.
Right.
But they weren't doing that early in the year, maybe because they didn't trust anybody in particular.
At times they did.
Why not just put Urseg in the ninth?
At times they did, though. I mean, heck, that's why some of the numbers we pointed out earlier in the year with MacArthur, I mean, they did have when he came, you know, he came in the eighth inning a handful of times, majority of it was the ninth, because at one point, this speaks to the bigger problem all year with the bullpen. At one point in time, I know it sounds crazy now, but at one point in time, MacArthur, with the stuff that he had, he was one of their best options.
He was.
I mean, we can act like now where we're at, but at one point, that was the truth. And Urseg has the best stuff in the pen, pretty clear.
You think?
It's not even close.
God, he's fun.
Not even close. But I think they're going to continue to use him in the highest leverage, whether that's the ninth or the eighth or the seventh. And you brought up the scenario. This is the problem. People will be critical when they're like, hey, use him in the seventh. Why didn't you save him for the ninth?
But you're going to need him in the ninth if everybody blew it before
If other guys have issues, you know, I'll pick on Angel Zerpa, I guess, in this scenario. I could pick any.
He had a rough weekend.
I could pick any name just about. But, you know, you throw his name in the mix. Okay, so he pitches in the seventh instead. Well, if that blows up and you give up four runs, well, then Urseg's not even being utilized in the ninth. And I think that might be some of the thought process. Highest leverage, when things are the diciest, they're going to go with their best arm, and that's Urseg. If that happens to be the ninth inning, great. Like tonight, if you get the starting pitching outing you're hoping from and you get seven innings from your starter, which would be incredible, well, then, yeah, Urseg probably is going to pitch in the ninth inning. I mean,
if it's the seventh and there are two on.
If it's the seventh and there's a top of the order coming up, top of the order coming up, it might be Urseg.
I wonder if we're overthinking a little bit in that regard, though, because there is still something about it is still pitching and leverage to pitch in the seventh when you're up three. But, man, it is different if you were pitching in the ninth up three. I think if you have this level of inconsistency in your bullpen, you might need to rethink your strategy of, I want him to get the three biggest outs regardless of the inning,
sure,
starting in the seventh, and instead tell yourself that 1-2-3 in the seventh, you'd rather have Urseg up against, let's just say it's 8-9-1 or 7-8-9, you know, whatever it's going to end up being, 9-1-2 if somebody lets up a hit or two, and you might just trust yourself there instead.
Look, we're all trying to figure out, and the Royals, frankly, this entire year have been trying to figure out this bullpen, but like this text says, I would rather them get blown up in the seventh than get blown up in the ninth.
The difference is the same. What? I don't want them to get blown up at all.
What? Are you just mad that you invested your time in the game, and then you feel like you would have already stopped watching it or listening in the seventh? Because otherwise, I don't get that logic. Like, I hear you. It's more disappointing when you seem closer to winning the game. But either way, you're blowing the game in the seventh or you blow it in the ninth. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I just...
You blow it in the seventh. What is your argument that, you know, that they have two innings to come back from it? Is that the argument? Otherwise, you're already up three, though.
you just feel less bad emotionally. The problem is the same, because then you run into a usage thing, too, where if you're always saving him for the ninth, that's not always when you need him. For instance, if you'd saved him for the ninth on their win on Saturday, he doesn't pitch. He doesn't pitch at all, as a matter of fact. He doesn't come in for the – now, in this case, they use him for the four-out save, but he doesn't come in at all because by then they would have had a five-run lead and they just put somebody else in. And it wouldn't have mattered exactly when he pitched. But I like that they brought him in for the final out and were planning for an out save and did still leave him in that game to get the win.
Yeah, so the same texture. You would have three more innings to score runs. Yes, but if...
They have those innings no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. That's just like mental coping or mental gymnastics, yeah. Basically.
We're telling you that like they want him to get important outs. They don't care what inning those important outs are in, and you're more likely to get those guys out with Urseg than you are some other pitcher in there. We're changing the possibility of a run's being scored, not the number of outs remaining to score. In this hypothetical, you have nine outs against whatever pitcher. You have the same opportunity to score in those nine outs, whether they have the lead or are behind. Although I would make the argument, if they are behind, you know, like if they are in the lead, you know, maybe less pressure to score
seventh
those runs.
Inning,
less, you know,
seventh inning, if all of a sudden you go from up three to down four, then you're in big trouble at that point. You can say, oh, you got a couple innings to come back, but there's also natural issues that come up with that, not to mention your opponent, who maybe they all of a sudden, Cody, now their closer's in play, and they're going to utilize him differently. So either way, I know we're all just trying to talk through ways to get this thing right, because we all recognize it's the biggest issue with this baseball team that, despite that, is sitting in a really good spot. It's in a really good spot with 40-something to go.
I just once again, because someone's like, this is the biggest series of the year. I mean, that's pretty much the rest of the way, right? They have a road series for a team they're only a game back of for half or whatever, a half game back for the second wild card spot while holding on to, by what, 2.5 games, the final wild card spot before they hit the most difficult stretch, arguably, of their entire season in a few weeks. Yeah, every series is going to feel massive at this point because we can taste the playoffs again. That's what it comes down to. The bullpen frustrates us more because we can taste the playoffs. If they had a top, this is what's funny. It's like, well, if they had a top 10 bullpen, yeah, they'd have the best record in the American League. You want to know the truth? If they had a top 10 bullpen, if every pitcher they had signed to be in the bullpen was HD or whatever, they don't have to be that. If they were just a top 10 bullpen, they would be the best team in the American League. But I can't not.
Every team would say
they
that.
They
can
only spend so much money. They spend their money on the starting pitching, and that's gangbusters.
Right, I mean, pick whatever team. You know, pick the Guardians.
If you chose their weakest.
Yeah, use Guardians, for example. They've already been one of the best teams in baseball. But if you told them that they suddenly had two all-star starting pitchers, they'd say, well, we'd be the best team in baseball. Well, no kidding. Like,
probably.
We can do that with a lot of teams. So we'll talk some more Royals baseball a little bit later on in the show. Let's get to the preseason game a little bit in the kickoff in particular.
Oh,
so in Kansas City, it was highlighted even more because of the sequence in which the Jags kicked it off. The ball bounces in the end zone. Then it bounces out of the end zone. Derek Prince just starts to kind of run off the field. McCall Hardman comes back to grab the football. The problem is, while he was in the end zone, he brought the ball back to the end zone. At the time, they ruled it
a safety.
Then they review it. Initially they did not rule it a safety.
At the time they ruled it a
touchback. Then they ruled it a safety. We find out after the game that was incorrect. Touchback was not the correct call, but since McCole was kneeling before pulling the ball to his body, this should have been the Chiefs ball at the 1 yard line, which still would have been a bad scenario for Kansas City to be in. So it shouldn't have been a safety, shouldn't have been a touchback, should have been at the 1. It speaks to the learning curve that everybody has with this brand new kickoff. And I've been pretty against it for the most part with what I've seen in preseason. And everybody is correct. I should wait until we see it for a couple weeks of the regular season. I'm willing to do that.
You got one exciting kick return in that game.
We
not
did.
By the Chiefs,
that's what's funny is like that was the most exciting kickoff we've seen in the entire preseason from any team to this point. Because my issue with it is that, yes, the NFL wants more returns.
And it
is working. By that metric alone, this new kickoff is doing what they wanted, which was to eliminate touchbacks. 82% of kicks have been returned in the first week of preseason action. Only 22% of kicks were returned in 2023. So that's a huge shift. They would say it's a big win. There have been four returns of more than 45 yards. There have been three what they call super touchbacks, basically out at the 40, and the Chiefs got burned on a safety that was incorrect. So my issue is more with the fact that we had to have a review on a kickoff. My whole thing has been about wasting time. And last year, kickoffs were a waste of time. They're trying to make it where they're not a waste of time. Now, maybe this was just completely fluky on the safety and all that, but if we're going to have reviews and we're also going to get the call incorrect, then it's a bigger problem than what we had before.
Yeah,
and so that's where
it's messier.
And we're not going to know the answer to this till it plays out. My only pushback, I would say, Cody, on the stat right now that looks great, which is that
they're returning kicks.
82% of kicks have been returned. And you're like, wow, that's exactly what we want. And I also see that, hey, well, teams aren't even doing what they want to do yet. Wait till that happens. You're correct. They're not doing what they want to do. What's to say, though, that after seeing the kickoffs, that teams don't actually try to just say, we'll go ahead and do the touchback still. We don't care. It's not worth it. We'll just let them have the ball at the 30. And if that's the case, then this whole excitement about 82% is not going to happen in the regular season.
I still think that teams are so analytically driven, they're going to be really hard-pressed to concede that. Because I told you, 6% of the time, you are more 6% more likely to score on a drive that starts 5 yards closer. So from the 25 to the 30, that's a 6% increase in scoring. That's a lot of scoring you're giving up. If you're an opposing team, are you willing to give up that percentage across the board just to avoid the tackling?
But we saw in the Chiefs, for example, on their return they gave up to Jacksonville, because of the number, one missed tackle. Like, if you're the Chiefs and you're up by seven with 15 seconds to go in the game, I'm letting them have it at the 30, Cody, because we've seen in the kickoff so far one missed tackle, and the guy might be gone.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue that's exciting, sure, but I'm saying I think you're going to see.
They might not want the inherent risk that comes with a better return.
Correct. And so the 82% number, everybody's trying to test out the return, so they're even telling their players, basically, we don't want the touchback. We need to see this play. Yeah. Feel itself out. There was a game in the Colts preseason game where the ball was kicked 5 yards in the end zone. In the regular season, that dude is taking the touchback.
And staying at the 30.
Instead, he took it out because I'm guessing they want to see it. So the 82% number, I think, is overinflated right now. We're not seeing 82% of all kicks
but
being returned.
Last year in the Super Bowl, there were zero returned. Last year in the NFL, there were like 10% returned. So, I mean, even if it's 50%,
right,
it is certainly
a massive increase.
And some of the, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to fix it. The good news is you and I both know it's a one-year rule. If it stinks and we don't like it, it's gone. And they just get rid of the kickoff and everybody starts with the ball at the 30 and we all just move on with lives. And kickoffs will be that thing that you, like, kind of remembered once in your youth.
What tweak are they going to make even before the start of the season? Because what the Jags did, whether it was intentional or not, kicking the ball in the end zone, and then it had backspin. And I doubt the kicker intended to do it. But kicking the ball, and it had backspin, and it bounced out, that's the play you want every single time. Kick it in
put
the end zone,
it.
Get it to bounce, and then land back at the 3 yard line and put the return team in a spot to screw up like the Chiefs did, or they're going to have the ball inside the 5. That's the money play. The end zone, it's not like it is not a dead ball when it lands in the end zone if it bounces out. It is not. We found that out.
I am glad that it happened now. Because it's not just in the Chiefs special teams meeting that they're going to go over.
Every team.
Every team in the league is going to show them that play and be like, hello, classroom, lesson time. Marker on the board, pencils, you know, like it is time to prepare. In that scenario, this is what you have to do in order to maintain possession, in order not for it to be a safety, and all of those things. I like that at least there are kickoffs again. Because they did completely eliminate those from play. And I have seen a couple of decent kick returns. Not that there weren't decent kick returns at any point last year. They're just so infrequent.
We're not going to know, though,
until... It's, like, stunning when somebody actually does it.
We really won't know, though, until a couple weeks in the season. Because whether it's going to work, but also if teams then start to get a point where they're fine just kicking into the end zone still. Because they understand the risk on the return part.
Yeah, it's not even just the return part. It's that if you screw up some part of your kick and they get it at the 40. You know? Like, you can't risk that either, Gold. You screw up the kick and they get it at the 40. That, you don't even need a good return. You could screw up a kick enough. You said there were six of the super touchbacks or whatever the hell they call them. And that will...
Yeah, four. What did I say? Four of the super touchbacks have happened in the preseason.
So, I mean, that's not a non-zero. That's got to factor into the return part, too.
Yeah.
Because if that's going to happen for a quarter of the teams, let's say... It's not that many. It's through a tenth or, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know when those occurred. If those occurred at the end of the game, I have no idea this scenario. Yeah, as I said, if there's 5 seconds left in the game, you'll go ahead and give them the super touchback or whatever you want to call it, because you're not going to risk the return, because the way it's set up, it potentially could lead to...
I'm just lying. 417 said the 49ers won't learn it because they didn't know the overtime rule.
That's true as well.
They're like, wait, what?
Someone asked about onside kicks. What do you mean? What about them?
You have to declare them, and they can't be until later in the game.
Yeah. If that's
no more surprise onside kicks.
If someone's saying by eliminating kickoffs, then what do you do? That
you just start the ball at the 30.
Yeah.
The end.
Mm-hmm.
You get possession, and you're just standing on the 30.
It's like
a touchback.
This year
same thing they did last year, essentially.
This year will decide whether or not we have kickoffs in the NFL going forward. I want kickoffs. My big thing has just been, like, if it's still going to be a waste of time, I don't want them. Because we know they're not going back to the old days where it was a major safety risk. Right? There's an inherent risk in playing football. We know that. But they still were. They changed it. They did not want guys running full steam ahead and causing, concussions or whatever it may be. And that's understandable. But if it's just going to result in reviews now happening a bunch on kickoffs and things like that, I still don't like it. So we'll see.
Text line just like, they couldn't have just moved the kicker back to kickoff?
No. Right. That's a
They moved him up so people would stop getting hurt. Yeah, that's inevitably the problem is they need a kickoff rule that allows for returns but removes the risk or lowers significantly the risk for concussions. They are trying to do two things at once. If they just want to kickoffs back, they just move them back to 5 yards like they used to be. Problem solved. Kickoffs are back. But they don't, kickoff returns are back. But they don't want that because people were getting concussed at an unusually high rate. This is why eventually I think they'll just get rid of them. I don't know. That makes it an extra challenge. It's just such a mess. A lot of players back to practice today, by the way, if you missed that earlier. Justin Reed, Nick Bolton, and Kadarius Toney all on the practice field today. Light practice, shorts and T-shirts, but they had helmets and they were participating, which is the first time for some of them in quite some time. So good to see at least a few more Chiefs players out of practice. A good positive step with 3 weeks to go before the regular season.
Our training camp cover is presented by Technology Group Solutions, the official IT provider of your Kansas City Chiefs. Up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour as practice continues. We'll talk more about Hollywood Brown's injury and who would have to step up the most if, in fact, he misses games. That's next on Cody and Gould.
Chiefs Kingdom, this is Mitch Holtis, and welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour on Cody and Gold, every day at 11:30 on your official broadcast partner, the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
We are back here in the St. Joe Chiefs practice, basically wrapping up at this point, just a couple more players getting some side work in, and then practice will officially be done, and we're expected to have Chiefs wide receiver Justin Ross join us here on our set inside the Comcast business tent, powering possibilities. Talk to him about another year at camp and what could make this year different for him in terms of his role on the team. He's one of those guys on the back end of the roster. If he makes the roster, that would be towards the end of the depth chart. Maybe he's your sixth wide receiver, your seventh wide receiver if they keep them. How does that all play out? He had the one nice catch in the preseason game, and anytime there's been a highlight over the last two training camps from him, he seems to get more and more traction amongst fans, at least.
But also, with each passing year, he doesn't make the 53-man roster gold out of camp, then you just got to wonder if he's a guy who lives in perpetuity on this 16 additional players absent the 53, where if things were to get devastated enough, sure, you know the system, you know the role, we know what you do well, and you can do that. But if you can't crack through... Last year would have been a good chance to crack through because the roster was so bad. They were looking desperately for wide receivers and were unable to come up with that. So it's hard to say. But, I mean, he makes one catch a preseason where I'm like, yeah, I don't see a reason why he couldn't throw to the guy inside the five-yard line. Yeah,
that's why he still is in the mix. I mean, that's what it is. It's someone at his size, his ability to make catches like that.
Contested catches.
That's why there's intrigue with him and why he's had an opportunity as he's now actually on the far side of the field signing some autographs with some fans and then – I'm guessing here in about 3.5 minutes, 5 minutes, we should have Justin Ross joining us once he wraps up with autographs. We are going to hear from Andy Reid. I will tell you just some notes from after practice before we hear the full press conference from Andy Reid. Probably thought that this was the case based off of the fact that Hollywood Brown was already back in Kansas City, but Andy Reid did confirm that Hollywood Brown did not require surgery.
That's
with
great
that injury on the first play of the game, a sternoclavicular shoulder joint. that was dislocated. And potentially could have been a really, really serious injury. That's why I went to the hospital. Some of the experts were explaining why that was the case. That, I mean, it could have been deadly just based off of the location of how that all works. Fortunately, not nearly to that extent of severity requiring surgery. And so now the question is recovery time. And if you're basing it off of prior cases, that's what everybody's been doing. Could be in line for week one. Could miss week one, could be available week two. Obviously, everybody's a little bit different in recovery, but I don't think anybody's worried that he's missing significant time. But missing a game or two is a bummer considering the camp he's had, considering he's part of this new-look offense, not only extending the field, but being a reliable weapon for Patrick Mahomes.
I think the most optimistic timeline is like week two. Everyone does heal a little bit differently, but, I mean, Tyreek didn't get back until 5 days after. We're talking about what Hollywood would need to do in order to get on the field for week one. Now, you could have said maybe he was available on Tuesday of that week, gold, and we don't know, right? And then was able to play in the game sooner than that. So I guess it's possible if you're a super optimist, week one for Hollywood, I'll take anything less than two games. You let me lock in two games are done, then I'll feel pretty good. Now, the fact that Jacksonville, the doctors were able to reduce, I think as Andy Reid put it, the dislocation of that clavicle, of that area, well, then you got to feel a little bit better about the possibility of him getting on the field sooner. This, my bigger question now is, do you run into the problem like you did with Travis Kelce last year, where it's not when you get back from the injury? Tyreek Hill got back after around 30 days and played 50% of the snaps in the first week and only 70% in the second week. But for how long is Hollywood Brown not the full member of the offense like you had planned? And my guess is that if that's the case, my guess, Gold, is that he is not a full participating member of the offense until four games.
Could be. Could
and
be
that,
the case.
And that
sucks.
Hurts.
If that's
that
the case.
Hurts.
Yeah,
because those two first games are against the Ravens and the Bengals, which is not an easy way to start your year by any means.
No, and this goes back to the potential suspension for Rashee Rice. And how much more concerned are you about Brown missing a game or two, or just, as to your point, being fully good to go for a month?
Yeah.
If Rice is suspended. If he's not suspended, look, you go in to week one and you have Rice with Justin Watson. Yeah, that'll be who I actually
that was
think.
Last year.
I actually think who, you know, Rice with Justin Watson and Xavier Worthy and Mecole Hardman and that group.
But that's an improvement. Mecole improved the group last year. Xavier Worthy improved the it would have improved the group last year. So I mean, it's not as good as with Hollywood there, obviously, but it's still an improvement.
But yeah, I mean, I've had to alter expectations over the weekend now for what I expect from Hollywood Brown this season. I mean, I thought he was in line for a career year, and the reality is he's probably missing at least one game. But even if he doesn't, what you're saying, you know, the snaps are probably down. I can't remember who it was. I think it was not Pro Football Doc on Twitter, who used to be a doctor with the Chargers, but one of the other former team doctors that now runs a Twitter account, basically, right? But
yeah,
he's a doctor.
Not the Chargers.
But basically he was explaining that the type of injury that Hollywood Brown had, not only the severity, but reaching your hands out to grab a football, he says, so
painful.
So how long is that? I mean, just think about that movement.
Yeah.
So
a pretty important movement for a wide receiver.
Yeah, being able to not go alligator arms on it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that's part of it. And now I think as we sit on August the 12th, there is more focus, in my opinion, on the potential suspension for Rashee Rice if it doesn't happen, because that – if you're going into week one and you don't have Brown and Rice, then you really are back to relying so heavily on Mahomes to be perfect with Kelce and with Pacheco. Maybe this is where Pacheco, his improvement, we think, at least that's the story, in the passing game comes into play.
Were these two tight end sets or these heavier sets of the fullback?
And what does this do for the wide receiver room in the competition? Because, all right, we know Brown and Rice and Worthy.
McColl.
Are all, you know, and Watson are all making the team. That's five. So then let's say they keep seven.
Let's say they don't IR. This is the only problem. IRing.
Well, that's the question. If they think it's even longer for Hollywood Brown, then is that how they save a roster spot? You know, we're asking whether or not Kadarius Toney potentially makes the team or not, Cody. His own injury status, and he's back at training camp practice today, but does Kadarius Toney's health give you another roster spot if he's somebody that isn't available to start the season. We see this play out a lot where all of a sudden we talk about, oh, man, there's only so many spots in, for this guy, and then somebody gets hurt because it's the reality of preseason, and you never hope it happens to a star player or something like that. And, yeah, on the text line, someone bringing up for the Hollywood Brown injury in particular, yeah, it's the similar injury, same injury that happened to Tyreek Hill.
And same city.
Same city. That's just weird. Like that,
yeah,
the fact that happened to be in Jacksonville as well, and how that played out is definitely not something you you usually would expect. Reminder, our Chiefs player interviews here on 610 Sports Radio are brought to you by the St. Joseph Convention and Visitors Bureau, as we have Chiefs wide receiver Justin Ross post-practice today stepping up. You guys practicing on the rain a little bit? Yeah, we felt like Andy maybe wanted that at some point during camp.
Yeah, man, I think we were much rather practicing the rainy grass than the turf anyways, though, so it's no problem with us.
And soften it up a little bit? Why would you rather practice in the rain?
You know that turf, man. That turf get pretty bad on your knees and everything like that. So we'd rather come out here in the grass.
When you look at your performance in the preseason game, I think people pointed out you've made some big plays at those times. Mm-hmm. What is it you can do differently this year to like make sure the Chiefs are like, yeah, we got to have Justin Ross with us all the time. We got to make sure he's on the roster.
I say probably consistency. I just got to stay consistent and stay in my work.
What about what? I mean, which part of consistency? The route running, the catching? Like, what are they asking from you?
Just to play my role, really, just to go out there when my name is called, just go out there and make the plays that are given to me.
What do you make of the wide receiver room? I mean, there's some familiar faces, but there's also some new guys in the mix as well, some younger guys. What do you make of the entire wide receiver room right now, as we said, only a preseason game in?
We got a great room, man, so far. We got speed, we got size, we got athleticism, we got everything we need in that receiver room right now.
This camp, one thing we've noticed a little bit different from a year ago was immediately at practice going down the field a little bit more. It seems like there's more of an emphasis in going down the field, and you're part of that at times as well. Is that something that has been just so focused in meetings as well?
I mean, just getting back to Chiefs football, man, everybody knows Chiefs football is that downfield, blazing speed, and going to go get big touchdowns. So we're just getting back to that.
When you look at what you guys can do offensively, we had asked, I think it was like Spags that talked about the defensive goals. What do you guys want to be? And Karlaftis, is the interior, you guys talking about like, hey, we want to be the number one offense in football again? Is that the way it's talked about?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We want to go out there and just show everybody what we all know, where everybody in Kansas City know, everybody in the nation knows for real that Kansas City Chiefs football is that high-power football.
How much does that come from just like the Mahomes pressure of it? He seems like he enjoys preseason football than the guys who actually have to play.
Yeah.
Like no one's more hyped than Pat on the sideline. He seems like he likes preseason football as much as anyone.
Yeah, man. Pat, he'd be ready for all type of action, man. Anything, preseason, regular season, practice, he's always ready and always supporting us.
What's something you've seen him competitive in that isn't football? Like what's the thing where you're like, all right, rein it in a little bit. We're just all trying to play ping pong or whatever.
Basketball. He's a real big competitor in basketball. He thinks he's like the LeBron of basketball when he comes to that.
Who's the best player on the team, do you think?
I'm not going to really shy away from myself, for real.
Okay, there we go.
I say myself.
You got the right height for it. I mean, I feel like that's got to give you an advantage over some guys.
Yeah,
who's your biggest competition then on the team for that?
Competition? I don't know, man. I got myself sweeping the whole room.
We got Justin Ross hanging out with us here on 610 Sports Radio. We were just talking a little while ago about the new kickoffs, and like clearly, even the player, everybody's trying to figure out this thing. Take me through that particular sequence, and from watching, I know you weren't on the field, I don't think, at that particular instance, but what did you see there? It seems like the rule got screwed up, even with the replay officials, and it shouldn't have been a safety.
You know, the rules are a little weird. It's new, so they still have a couple things they have to fill out, and I feel like that's just going to come with the time, for real. So that specific play though, I really can't call it for real. It was a weird play. It dropped right on the 1 yard line. We're trying to get a touchback, so it's kind of weird with the rules.
Do you like the rule change? Because the numbers have shown so far that there's like 80% of the returns or kickoffs are actually being returned, whereas last year there was very few. And that the goal of the NFL was to get more returns. I would imagine you would like that as someone that has an opportunity maybe to be out there sometime.
No, as far as returns, I feel like it's going to help the game a lot. But as far as like the rule changes and stuff, it's just going to take a little time to get used to.
So we've asked this of players before that have had really good camps or have caught in buzz. Maybe in like Creed Humphrey's rookie year. Mm-hmm. Do you get a sense that you're like a fan favorite on social media? Are you aware of that?
I feel like the fans, they've been around with me since I got here. So, I mean, I play my part, and I do what I'm supposed to do, and they keep supporting me.
Well, let's get to know you a little bit. Some of the stuff we like to do, because we don't know you off the field.
Right.
Last guest we just had on said that they're starting to work on their original car from high school.
Yeah.
They're going to start fixing up. What kind of things do you do off the field?
I'm from Alabama, so I like to do stuff outside. I like to fish. I like to ride four-wheelers, hunt, stuff like that. So,
do you have a property then? You like to get, like, do you be on, like, a big plot of land somewhere?
I don't have my own property yet, but I have friends back home. We go out there and ride. We go out there and fish and do all types of stuff.
What do you like to catch?
Bass.
Bass, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was curious.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, bass, really? Catfish, and stuff like that.
I don't know anything about fishing, man. I don't know anything.
Okay, can you... If you catch it, do you just release it, or can you catch it, skin it, cook it? Can you go through, like, the whole process?
I can't do it, but it depends on the day. We can definitely round them up.
Okay, so as a group, you guys can handle.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can't do it by myself.
Well, then we got to know whether or not you can cook or not. You know?
Oh, yeah, I'm not the best cook now. I'm not the best cook, but I can prep. I can prep food for sure, but I'm not the best cook.
And we've talked to a couple of your teammates. A lot of praise for Carl Loftus, and they said maybe he's the best griller on the entire team.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
You got to get in that group. I mean,
hey, he says he only invites the defensive ends, but if you just start showing some interest.
Yeah, I just got to show up one day. They're not going to turn me around.
We're talking to Justin Ross. How are you just feeling health-wise? Everybody knows your story, and obviously I think that's another reason why people have been rooting for you to be on this team over the last couple of years. How are you just feeling physically, and do you feel like you're further enough removed now from some of your past injury history?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm feeling great. I'm feeling 100% healthy. I'm ready to get to it this year, ready to finish out this whole season healthy and with a great mindset.
Do you have a chance to talk to Hollywood? Obviously a scary injury for him on Saturday.
Yeah, I did talk to him. I just told him I was praying for him, man, just get well soon.
Sounds like he got to avoid surgery at least, so, like, good news. I mean, those, like, on field, those initial things when you're starting to hear, hey, he might be hurt, it might be this kind of injury, is there, like, a little bit of a buzz to it? Or do you guys just try to put it ahead, behind you, and then deal with it after the game, you know?
That's our brother, so it's going to always be on our mind, but we still going to have a task at hand at the time, so we're going to have to finish the game. But that's our brother. We always think about it.
What are you trying to get out of the rest of preseason? You got two more left? Mm-hmm. What are you going to try to get out of it personally?
I got to score a touchdown, man. I got to go out there and make – I got to score a touchdown, man. I couldn't get one last game, but I feel like I'd get one sooner today.
Okay. I believe in you. I mean, look, you ought to just show them the highlight tape and be like, if we can side the 10, you mind just tossing one up?
No problem at all. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Well, what's that feeling, though, when you're in the, you know, your opportunity to get a touchdown? You're usually one of the biggest wide receivers on the field that time. Mm-hmm. To just be able to, whether it's going up and mossing somebody or whatever, but just being able to have a ball just thrown up and you're able to go up and get it. Like, that's got to be, other than just the fact it's a touchdown, that you're able to do something that not everybody's able to do.
Right. Now, it feels good, man. I've pretty much been doing that for a long time now, since my high school. So, I mean, it feels good, but I still got some little areas I got to clean up to just make it perfect, to get it the best way I can.
I think we've had other – high school, you're probably doing yourself short. I'm going to guess in, like, fourth grade you used to run shot on some sport against other people. I feel like superior athletes – identify themselves early.
Yeah, I was pretty good. Like I said, basketball, I was pretty good. I was pretty good back then.
Did you watch any of the Olympics then? Did you have a chance to watch the men's?
I watched a couple games, a little tads and bits of it. Yeah.
What's your favorite sport outside of the basketball for that?
I played baseball. I played baseball also back in the day.
You played baseball too?
Yeah, I played baseball.
What position?
I played shortstop, I played third base, and I played a little right field.
Okay, what style of player were you? The home run hitter, the speed guy, obviously, I'm sure played a factor.
Yeah, I can hit. I can hit a little bit. Yeah, I'll probably go up fourth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you play in the softball game that they had?
I didn't make it this year.
I feel like this would have been who was it? Was it LRZ? Had never played baseball before. He goes up and
hit a home run.
It's a home run. Hits a home run right away or something.
Yeah. No, he's talented, man.
But it just feels like one of those things that if you're going to do it, you might as well do it. You got to get out to the K. You guys are next door.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just figure out a way to get you, like, you know, get you a chance to take some BP on the field. They probably let you do that. See if you can still get one out.
Yes, sir. No problem at
all. All right, Justin. Appreciate it, man. We'll let you get back up there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
There you go. That's Chiefs wide receiver Justin Ross with us here on 610 Sports Radio. Our Chiefs player interview is brought to you by the St. Joseph Convention and Visitors Bureau. And a big season, a couple games ahead for Justin Ross as he tries to make this roster. And, you know, I think the wide receiver room is even tougher this particular season as he was laying out feels good about the wide receiver room and says he's got to get a touchdown at preseason. Chiefs Lions, Saturday. At Arrowhead.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing some practice red zone look, you know, like preseason, right? If we think that Justin Ross makes sense as a red zone target, let's get him some red zone touches. Let's get inside the 10-yard line. You know, I personally hate the back shoulder fade route.
Yeah.
But if we're going to practice, I'm open to it then. In a preseason game, I'm willing to look. But it could also be those, like, we underestimate the, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the back of the end zone ones where you can.
Yeah, that was a great
catch. But you can put someone in the back of the end zone and still use their height as an advantage because those players only want to get so deep and not take away some of that front part of the end zone in case somebody can run and catch up short. So you sometimes can use height at the back of the end zone, not necessarily the corners or the sides, but at the back of the end zone. I'd love to see him, you know, at least try.
The catches, you asked him, does he reels on social
media.
He's
a fan favorite, man.
It's always, you know, we joke, it's the slow-mo catches, and yeah, he's mm-hmm. been very impressive catches. I think the one thing you asked him, like, he mentioned consistency, but, like, what does that look like? Consistently getting separation. I think that for someone with his size.
Every catch shouldn't have to be like that.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. Yes, he can make, he's got great hands, clearly. We've seen the catches, but can he get separation enough consistently? And that's how he obviously could be more of a factor for this team. So we'll see. I mean, if he makes the team again, which he did last year, you're talking about someone that's going to be number six probably on the roster, number seven on the roster.
So let's say they don't put Hollywood on IR. They decide to keep him on the roster even if they got to sit on it for 2 weeks. So Hollywood,
Xavier Worthy,
McColl, Rice. Let's say Rice is
Justin Watson.
Watson.
That's five, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's two spots potentially left. If they keep seven
between
again.
Between Remigio.
Sky Moore.
Kadarius Toney. And Justin Ross. And that is if they keep seven. Yeah. So if we're being generous. And I think they'll keep seven now because Hollywood provides you maybe like, even if he's not IR'd in that scenario,
correct.
Maybe they want the extra flexibility there instead. So who are the two? Of those four wide receivers, who are the two?
Well, look,
and can Justin Ross finally kick through? I think it's one of.
Well, he was on the roster. He made the roster last year. Let's not forget.
Yeah,
it's just
did.
It was an easier wide receiver room to make. I think to answer your question, right now, with strength for Kadarius Toney, he was back at practice. That he has to play in this preseason game Saturday. I think. He needs to show them in preseason that he can play a game and stay healthy. It's not even so much the ability because they kind of know athletically what they're getting. That's the reason why he's still around is the athleticism. The mistakes last year, if that was so problematic, he wouldn't have made it to training camp. If the Instagram video was a problem, he wouldn't even have made it to training camp. That stuff hasn't factored in, I don't think, to them as much as can he be available for us this season if you're the Chiefs. And so he needs to play in the preseason game. Yeah, look good.
Play well.
Can he come back and practice the following Monday?
Practice the Monday after?
Yeah, that's what I think you have to see. So the one part now that I feel a little bit better if I'm Sky Moore, and I could be way off on this, once Hollywood Brown got hurt on the very first play, Sky Moore was the next receiver in. Now maybe that's, hey, his job's in jeopardy.
They were probably getting him a lot of work to diagnose.
Correct. His job's in jeopardy, so hey, we need to see a ton more of Sky Moore to figure out our decision. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, it just depends on if you're feeling like being positive today or negative. And I'm sure he's got a better sense of his standing, and his agent's got a better sense of his standing with the team than not. I wouldn't, if I were the Chiefs, keep carrying both Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. You carried them together for years, and they have not been regular contributors. Like, you're getting the same level of productivity out of both of them. A couple hundred yards. You don't need both guys with the same amount of, or lack of, depending on how you look at it, upside at this point, because you don't have to write off Sky Moore's entire career. He is still in year three. There is still time to get better and all of those things. Carrying both seems kind of sick. I'd almost rather personally see Nico Remigio because four phases and all the other parts of the team that he can help.
The question is, who can you sneak through to the practice squad too? You know, so Kadarius Toney's not a practice squad guy. He's making $2.5 million. If they cut him, they cut him.
Sure.
He's not going to be on the practice squad.
Remigio,
he had the injury too, so that's how they protected him last year. They remember he had the preseason injury after the Saints game, and so they didn't even have to worry about sliding him through. He was protected due to injury, and so I wonder if they, based off of film that's out there, I wonder if Remigio would get picked up by another team now. That's the question.
Kind of like Amir Smith-Marset.
Depending on what he does the rest of the camp, that's the trickier thing, whereas Justin Ross I could see being someone that maybe makes it through the practice squad. So we'll see. He is definitely, if he makes the team, he's one of the final guys to make the team. And now you look at, all right, X amount of receivers. Are they keeping four tight ends again? Are they keeping three? Are they keep four running backs, unlike they kept three? I mean, it gets really complicated. If we're going to hype up Carson Steele, we all think he's making the team now. All right. So if you think Denarik Prince is also making the 53, then that's four running backs. Or is Denier Prince a guy they think they can sneak through? And he's the problem. I mean, this is all the juggling they're going to have to do, because you can't sit here and tell me they're keeping seven receivers and four tight ends and four running backs. The math doesn't work on the 53.
No, somebody – otherwise they're just like, it's just these five linemen and nobody else. Like, there is a math problem at some point. And because of some of the injuries you've had previously on the offensive line, or like the, you know, unknown with any guys, like, you know, like what you normally like some depth there. He typically keeps an extra lineman than an extra linebacker and tight end. And so, yeah, I think they might just keep three tight ends. I think that might be where they save the roster spot that we're talking about.
I mean,
and Irv Smith just
goes really
away.
It's really Noah Gray and Irv
Wiley and Noah Gray and Kelsey.
It's really a if they were to actually have a true battle, and for Irv Smith, it's between Irv Smith and Noah Gray then.
Yeah.
Because Wiley, you drafted, he's on the team, and Kelsey. So it really is, if they're only keeping three, Noah Gray.
And Noah Gray's proved he's reliable enough longer. For you. Why the hell would you choose Irv
Smith
over him?
I agree. I think Irv Smith will end up being the odd man out there.
There is on our social media, we're going to have a video coming out, our Chiefs Take Tuesday, and one of us, not me, says that Mecole Hardman is not making the team.
Well, wouldn't me either. I didn't say it.
Well,
you're saying someone, one of us, is like a member of 610 Sports Radio?
Somebody at the station says Mecole Hardman is not making the roster. If that doesn't happen, I mean, who does? I mean, like, say Mecole doesn't make it.
Then in that case, they are keeping Tony and Sky Moore, and they're
correct.
Keeping one of the two of Justin Ross or Remigio. But I don't know, man. Why even bring Mecole back if he's not making the roster? He showed up last year and was more consistent. He has had – this is what's always so hard to remember about Mecole. Mecole has had – his best season is better than Kadarius Toney's. His best three seasons combined are better than Kadarius Toney's by a pretty wide margin. So it's like pretending that his productivity doesn't matter at all just because Toney's a couple of years younger but has never shown any kind of consistent level of production. Mecole, I don't know, man. It's just like wearing an old hat with Mecole. You know what he does well, and I don't know why you wouldn't just keep him on the roster. Doesn't make a lot of sense at that point.
All right, coming up next, we continue here from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. We'll get to what's trending and back into how Andy approaches the preseason. Plus, what do we see from some of the other young quarterbacks in the NFL, including one QB in the Chiefs division that's getting some hype after his performance? That's next on Cody and Gold.